Parthaya Pratibhutitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kritam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamani Santatami Bhagavad Gita Bhagavadvashini. Starting, we're somewhere in chapter 12, verse 13. Up until this point, all of these verses have been really dealing with Karma Yoga in detail, really unfolding the Karma Yogi and what is Karma Yoga and all of the different kind of levels of Karma Yoga. So we finished this section. Now, until the end of this chapter, it's the nature of the one who has jnana, the jnani. And so Swamiji's always said, and Shankara says it's the same thing also, what is just natural for a jnani is a value for a mumukshu. It becomes a value, a sadhana. Because your mind, as your mind matures in your knowledge, this is the natural state of the mind. It's not something that you need really to work for, but it's a value. It's like a value or a sadhana. But another way of looking at it is it's just the natural nature of the mind that isn't tortured by avidya, you know, hurt by ignorance. It's the ajnanam, really, the ignorance, self-ignorance, that causes the mind to have so much pain and desire, and the whole desire template is, I need this, I want this, I need this in order to be happy. And then all of the emotional problems come around the things that are thwarting these things that I believe, thwarting me from achieving these things that I think that I need in order to be happy. And this projection is ubiquitous. I mean, it's on every level, really, you know. I need this and I need that in this sphere. And you need your body to be a certain way. You need your prana to be a certain way. You need your sense organs to be a certain way. You need your mind and your thoughts to be a certain way. You know, you need the way people treat you to be a certain way. It's just on and on and on and on and on. It's like peeling an onion, you know. It's endless in terms of the levels of projections that we can have. To seeking in within duality, seeking within mitya, to gain that sense of well-being. But as you gain clarity in your knowledge, what happens is that the projection of your being, which has been projected onto the universe, really, is slowly withdrawn. These projections are withdrawn, so that your mind actually doesn't ask anymore for those things which aren't there. You know, you don't, like say for instance, once I see the rope, I'm no longer responding to the snake. I respond to the snake, you know, until I see the rope. And I can do all kinds of things. Maybe I like the snake. Maybe I'm afraid of the snake. Maybe I want to build a cage for the snake so that I can have it. On and on. Everything is in response to the snake until I see the rope. And for us, everything is in response to samsara, you know, until I recognize, I mean, all that I seek, you know, from my in my being, all the wholeness that I seek is always in reference to samsara until I see. See means recognize the wholeness itself. Once I see, I recognize. See means not with my eyes, but I recognize the swarupa, the very nature of the wholeness. Then why would I seek it where it isn't? And especially when the nature of the wholeness that I'm seeking is my own being. But there's nowhere to go. I don't have to go anywhere. And so the mind settles down. It's no longer behaving out of ajnanam. It's no longer behaving out of ignorance. It's behaving out of knowledge. So the knowledge affects your mind, your mind's behavior, of course. So, now, what is natural to a jnani, one who has knowledge, you know, is experienced often by a person who doesn't have knowledge. Because whether you have knowledge or you don't have knowledge, it's still the same self. And your mind, right, your mind is still not away from the self, like the snake's not away from the rope. Your mind isn't away from the conscious being that you are. And so those moments when, in life, when nothing is wrong, where all is well with me, I have no complaints, this usually lasts for very long, but still. There are plenty of times, you know, when there's no agitation, you're not experiencing any type of agitation. And so in those moments, all is well with me. You're experiencing a state which is much more natural for a jnani, right? Because for a jnani, all is well with me because I know myself. The self is not away, the self is not something to be experienced, because the self experience is never not there. You are never not there. But for somebody who doesn't have knowledge, the dependency for that type of sense of mental well-being comes really when everything is as I want it to be. And that happens sometimes, like when you fulfill a desire, you take a walk through nature, you listen to some beautiful music, talking with a friend. There's so many different experiences that we have and we seek out, so that I can just have that state of, that experiential state where the mind and the sense organs in the body are not creating any dissonance with my own nature. They're just as though invisible. Like, for instance, when your body, say you've done yoga or whatever, and your body is, there's no tension in the body, you know, the body just simply is being. It's not beckoning your attention. You know, it's not saying, oh, my knee hurts, you know, or I have a hangnail. There's nothing about the body that is calling for attention. It's just an instrument, you know. Often your mind is like that too. It's just an instrument. It's not calling for any attention, you know. And so then the mitya, the maya of your body, your mind, your sense organs is not creating emotional flux at that time. And so your being, which is illumining that, is not illumining anything that is problematic or painful. So all is well. See what I mean? And so the ajnani has many, many moments of this all is well with me, but there's a lot of other thoughts that come around that, like all is well with me, but I know that it's only for the moment. It's for what I've done. Whereas for a jnani, the all is well with me is constant, because it's not dependent upon the condition of the mind. It's dependent upon your being, which cannot not be well. The conscious being that you are, the me, is never not well. It is always exactly the same, no matter what the condition of the mind is. You know, you might say, I mean, somebody might say, yeah, but I want my mind like this, or I want my mind like that. That's fine. In fact, the mind does become calm, because you're not asking the world to be different than what it is. You don't need the world to be different than what it is, and then there's no reason for the mind to become upset. So yeah, the mind does become calm. But for jnani, you don't need the mind to be calm. It doesn't make any difference. Even though it is calm because it's not, the mind isn't wanting, doesn't need to go out to find some ananda. It already has the ananda. It's recognized the very source of the ananda, and so for that reason, it is calm. Much more as a constant, as a natural state. The mind is calm as a natural state. But I'm saying something different here that's kind of, that I think is important, because this is where the freedom is. The mind is calm. It could become uncalm. That's because the mind is by nature, since samsara, the mind by nature is subject to change. The body is subject to change. The sense organs are subject to change. Anything within the universe is subject to change. Yourself is not subject to change. The self that you are is calm because it has no parts. It's not subject to duality. You're not subject to duality. You're not subject to change. The self that you are is the self that you are. There's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing Maya can do about it. It's like, what can the snake do to the rope? It can't. It's two orders of reality. It can't do anything. Your mind can do nothing to you. Your body can do nothing to you. Your sense organs can do nothing to you. And no person can do nothing to you. Ishwara can't do anything. Somebody's often says, you know, even Ishwara can't touch you. Nor can Ishwara do anything to Brahman, to the self. You know? And so, when that viveka, as with the teaching, as that viveka takes place, that discrimination takes place, you recognize, I am free, no matter what. It doesn't make any difference whether the ocean is stormy or calm. It doesn't matter what's going on in your mind, because it's not affecting your being. And that viveka, you're alive to that viveka, to that discrimination. The one who is free is the self, the Atma. Your being is free. Self-knowledge is recognizing moksha, liberation, is the recognition of yourself, which is free. Moksha is not the attainment of a quiet mind. That's a secondary effect. Because what had made your mind agitated or hurt, you know, or despondent has to do with really projecting your being onto the universe and then trying to solve the problem, you know, of becoming full, becoming whole and complete by gathering things, the right things around me, and getting rid of the wrong things, and trying to make a stable situation out of what is ultimately completely unstable. It never works. You know? And so the mind is tortured and hurt by all of that over and over again. So the Buddha, you know, says all sukha is a dukkha yoni. Sukha means joy, happiness, is a womb, a yoni, for dukkha. Why? Because every experience that you have comes to an end. Everyone. There's no exceptions to it. Every single thing, that every single experience that you have comes to an end. Now, what if you like the experience? What if you like the situation? That's a sukha. Sukha. I like the situation. Well, there's the what's in the womb of that situation is its demise. It gives birth. It is a womb for its end. And that's what we call dukkha. The only reason it's dukkha is because you wanted it to be different, right? There was a prior condition, you wanted it to be this way, now it's changed into this, so you're not happy. So you can, when the mind is not asking, what if the mind, let's put it this way, your mind is not asking for the world to be its source of ananda, or wholeness and fullness. But when it stops asking that, it stops asking that when it sees the rope, when it recognizes the source of the ananda. And the source of the ananda, just like the snake is not away from the rope, your mind is not away from the ananda, the wholeness that it seeks. And once it realizes that, you know, it slowly begins to sit there and just be there. It takes some time because we have lifetimes of projecting, you know, our well-being onto the world. Yeah. And so the mind is very tricky. It'll even, because I remember this for myself, it'll even do this type of thing. It'll say, I know that I'm the source. I know that I'm the ananda that I seek. I really do know that. you know, but let me just have this. let me just have this, you know, so that my mind can just settle down. It'll do all of these type of things, which is fine. It really takes a while. It takes a while for the mind to just realize that all of this rigmarole is not worth it. You just don't want to do it anymore. It's not that you don't want to live anymore. You want to just be here with the life that you have. Because this life is your prarabdha. This life, the life that you have right now, is your karma. It's a given. It's already here. You already have it. You don't have to work for it. It is here completely, fully. And its very self is the ananda that you seek. And so, why not just be with this? See what I mean? This is it. It's yours. It's your prarabdha. It's Ishvara. It's fine. And you say, yeah, but if I could only have this. Then to the mind you say, no, come on home. Come on home, it's okay. You can do all you can deal with your mind on all kinds of levels. You can do all the inner child work, and all that is very helpful because there are different parts inside. But as you keep working with your mind, and really, yeah, just to make clear on this, working with the mind is like working with a snake in a way. Okay. But in the end, it's not working with a snake because yourself is so recognized and assimilated by the mind. That recognition is complete. The doubts are gone. You've lived with the samsara for long enough in the light of your knowledge to where your mind has had time to totally assimilate. Okay? So as your mind goes through that natural process of assimilation, which of your knowledge, which is really based upon based upon the aparoksha jnanam, that immediate recognition of your being as the mind gets used to being with you, right? Seeing you, recognizing you, then the things that had caused it to be a dharmic or to have qualities that you may not value, or that qualities you don't want to help with like this. Qualities that you don't want others to inflict upon you. You know, these qualities that, you know, you wish this person didn't have. I wish this person didn't have these qualities. I wish this person didn't have these qualities. Well, this person has these beautiful qualities. Those beautiful qualities are what is natural. And the other qualities that cause pain are not natural. They're the other qualities, like hatred, you know, hatred and jealousy and all of these things, All those qualities are born out of ajnanam. I hate you. I hate you because you've taken away my happiness. Well, nobody can take away your happiness. Nobody can even touch it. Yeah. So that these type of feelings and emotions are all born out of ajnanam. What about when that ajnanam is not there? Then these type of things don't arise. Yeah. They don't arise because you know yourself and yourself is free. That's that because of your free self, because of your knowledge of your free self, so that you can say, I am free, then the arising of these other types of thoughts is just a natural secondary effect of that knowledge. You see what I mean? And so you're not trying to be that way. You don't have to try to not hate. Well, let me know. We try that as a value, as a practice, as a sadhana. You know, because we have a value for that. But when, as you gain that nishtha, that value is, it's not even a value, it's just natural. It's natural to you. It's not a practice. You know?
Nishtha.
Nishtha means rootedness in your knowledge. So let's look at this verse. And all of these verses now are just describing what is natural to you as that ajnanam drops off. It's not something, it's not like a practice where, okay, I'm going to practice this. That's true, you can practice it, it's fine. But what Bhagavan is saying here, it's not about a practice. It's about who you are and what is a natural expression of your being, of your mind, when that, as that ajnanam goes away and all the complexes and traumas that it's caused. So, Advaishta sarva bhutanam, Advaishta sarva bhutanam, Maitra karana evacha, Maitra karana evacha, Nirmamo nirahankaraha, Nirmamo nirahankaraha, Samadukha sukakshani, Samadukha sukakshani. Advaishta. Advaishta is the one who is free from hatred. Dvaishtra is the dvaishtra. That r ending nouns are the er nouns, like walker, singer, you know, player. The er nouns, the doers. It's the doer. So dvaishtra, and dvaishta is the nominative singular, is it one who hates. One who hates. Advaishta is the one who doesn't hate, the unnegates. So the one who is free from hatred. You know? Sarva bhutanam maitraha. The one who has friendship. Maitraha is friendship for all beings. Sarva bhutanam. All, for all beings there is that friendliness, that state of friendliness. Maitreyi, maitraha. Karanaha evacha, and there is a natural karanaha, natural compassion. Niramamaha means one for whom there is no mamatvam. Mama means mine. Just, we'll go over all of these, I just want to translate for now. Mama is mine, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. Niramama, the one who is without that sense of mine. Mine, this is mine. The ahankara is also the one, the ahankara is that I notion. The I notion is the identification of your being with the experiences that you're having. For a jnani, the ahankara, the aham, the I, resolves into the self. You know? If I say, for the ahankara, if I say, for instance, if I say, you know, I'm going to the store, then I'm identifying the I with the body. Or what if I say, you know, I'm tired, I'm identifying the I with the prana. If I say, you know, I'm looking at this, I'm identifying the I with the sense organs. If I'm talking about a quality, I'm tired or I'm agitated or I'm happy or sad, I'm identifying myself with qualities of the mind. That's what the ahankara does. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what makes the ahankara. The ahankara is that anyonya adhyasa, that superimposition between me and the experiences that are coming and going. That's what it is. And the ahankara is born of ajnanam. It means that the one who has this problem of identification is not the atma. The self is free of all of this mind and thinking and all of that. That's not the nature of the self. Self is changeless. Your self is not thinking. It's not that running commentary. The mind is thinking. And the mind is labeling its experience. This is the whole satya mitya problem. So the mind is the one that says, I am, right? That's the ahankara. I am. And then it says, like, I, the conscious being, am whatever the condition of the mind is. Yeah? I, the conscious being, properly labeled, I, this conscious being, but am this body. So then I am healthy, I am sick, I am young, I am old, I am masculine, I am feminine, whatever. That's the ahankara. The ahankara belongs to the mind. And the mind is the one that has ignorance of its own nature, the nature of the self and the nature of itself. Satya mitya. It doesn't understand. It doesn't know. And it's not its fault either. Because the mind has never been without you. So why should it think, you know, that it is not you? Why should it think that? It's never without you. So whatever it's doing, whatever is going on, whatever it feels, whatever it thinks, that's me. Right? And so it takes it takes viveka, it takes really a mirror. The Upanishads are a mirror. You know, this teaching is a pramana. It's a means of knowledge that holds up a mirror to you and make and allows that viveka, that discrimination, to take place. As that takes place, as you recognize yourself and differentiate you, this me, the person that I am that is changeless, from all of these coming, these emotions and all of these feelings and thoughts and perceptions, and you have that drisha, that differentiation, seer seeing, differentiation, then what happens with the ahankara? The aham now lands upon you, not on the experiences that are coming and going. And so now, if I say you know yourself, and your I, when you say aham as a word, that aham is labeling yourself, the constant, changeless being that you are. And at the same time you say, I'm going to the store. That's the mithya I. Right? That's mithya. You know exactly what you mean. You don't think, if you say, I'm going to the store, you don't think, oh, you know, when you say that, oh, now the person has become an ajnani. Yeah. Oh, I'm tired. Oh, you know, she's become an ajnani. We have to talk. We function in the world. But where your eye lands, who are you? That is Atma, the self which is Brahman. Yeah? You've recognized it. That is the viveka. So that ahankara is not there. It's there as mithya. The ahankara is there as mithya, not as anything real. You don't mean it. It's not like you've lost your knowledge when you say, I'm going to the store. You just want to talk like a normal person. So you don't say the body is going to the store and the mind is feeling this and the very complicated. You just become a weirdo in the world. But it, all of that type of language is mithya. It's not taking away your knowledge at all. Who you are, and who you are, the self that you are, is aproksha, it's immediate, and it's very well known to you. But this self that you recognize, really the self which is Ishwara, the self that is whole, this is not table talk. This knowledge is something that you share with your students or with your gurubhais. You know, it's not table talk. You don't have to act it out in the world. It's silly, you know. But for you, the self that you are is the self that you are, and that knowledge is clear. So for you, there is no ahankara. Ahankara means a false I, the creation, the making of an I, the superposition of an I on something that is not you. So the self that you are is the stable self that comes more and more in gestalt, you know, to the forefront of your experience, because your experience never has covered it and never will cover it. It's only covered it. Your presence has only been covered in terms of ignorance, not in terms of any type of a veil, you know. It's not like the dark veil of ignorance, as though it's some kind of material that has covered me. There's no material covering me. There's just a superimposition on the part of the mind, like a red-hot iron ball, you know, where the fire and the iron have become merged together, and so they don't know one from the other until a viveka is there. No, this is the fire and this is the iron. The same for you, you know. I am here. Nothing ever changes. Nothing happens to me at all. And the nature of myself is ananda. It is whole and complete beyond any type of... See, all of these words are very misleading, like what I was going to say. You are whole and full and complete beyond anything that you would ever want. What that means is all of the display of joy and bliss and spiritual experiences that come and go. All of these things mean nothing. They mean nothing in the light of your own presence. Because if you weren't there, what do you care about all these bliss experiences? It's you're all you are the center of all of this, and where the ananda is, even from the standpoint of the mind, what the mind wants is you. And I say it has to, you ask your mind, do you want to have a bliss experience or do you want to have you? No, I want the bliss experience as long as I am here. I want the bliss experience for me. I want all experiences for me. That me, that's the me that is the beloved. You know? And that's what has to be recognized. It is your presence. There is nothing more dear to you than your own presence. These bliss experiences and all of this are nothing compared to your own presence. What you love, what is most dear, is your being. You know? But mind will twist that a little bit often and say, oh, well, my being must be a bliss experience then. No. Your being is not a bliss experience. It comes and goes. Your being is the wholeness, the ananda, the fullness that is present to all experience. And it is here fully, completely, right now. So the way to kind of wrap your head around it, because the bliss experiences, all of these anandas, ananda is a big word. We're always looking, okay, where's the ananda inside? Where is it? It's supposed to be here right now. Where is it? But the problem is that this word bliss is a contaminant. So you have to get rid of the word bliss for ananda and think of other words like wholeness or completeness. And even these words don't work. All these, love, all of these words are simply pointers to your own presence, which is the beloved or the most dear. We have all of these words, the beloved, the most dear, that which is whole, full, complete, stable, steady. These are just words, point, point, point. And you have to discover inside, okay, what about me is like that? What does that mean? And it's going, you are singular, singular. The nature of the self, of yourself, is really one without a second. There is nothing like it. You know? But it is the present, you are present fully to every experience that you have. But there is no experience like it. You understand? It's like you are there. Just think about it. Every experience that you have, every perception, every thought, you can just, it's good to sit in meditation and just watch your thoughts, just let your thoughts come, it's kind of like a vipassana, you just watch all the thoughts come and go and come and go. And then you recognize who is there, the being, the presence that is there, you, that is there as all of these thoughts are coming and going, these feelings, whatever it is, it's all coming and going in your simple, singular presence. And then you say, you can ask yourself, is this presence, this me, the me that is here, as the one in whom all of these thoughts are passing through, why do they call me the beloved? Why does this simple self, why is it called ananda? That's how you should ask it. Why am I called ananda? Am I ananda? Am I deserving of the title the beloved? You know? And then you think about it. And then you can ask a question like this. Is there anything other than this that's more beloved to me? Is there anything other than my own presence, my own being, that is more beloved to me? And you'll probably say no. It's all almost inconceivable to think of something that is more beloved than that being, your being, that is present to every experience that you have. And that is the beloved. That is ananda. That is the self that is Brahman. That beloved me is Ishvara. And so these meditations, in order to calm the mind down from all of the notional bliss bubbles to get to what is really fundamentally me, you know, is what all of so many meditations and classes, just like what I'm doing right now, is pointing, helping to get the mind to recognize that just the simple, very simple me that is here, that this very simple me is the very simple me that I cannot get rid of. It is this me that is Ishwara. It is this me that is Brahman. It is this me that is Ananda, that is the Beloved. And it never goes anywhere. But your mind has to sit with that for a while to recognize. It's kind of a shock. For me, it was a shock to recognize that it's true, that that is Ananda. I am that Ananda. I am that most dear. And all of these words sank down into kind of a normalcy, state of normalcy. Instead of all these kind of highfalutin ideas, I realized that the Ananda that they're talking about is my very nature that's here right now, not something to be experienced. The Ananda is already here as your very being. The experience is already here. That's why we don't call it an experience, because it's the aparoksha, it's the immediate conscious being that is present to all experience. And so, as one recognizes that, the aham lands here in my own being. And so there's no ahankara there. The ahankara, any ahankara, is mitya, right? It's just language. And then he says, nirmama, and so there is nothing, this idea of mine, this is mine and that is mine. We have all of this mamatvam, you know. It all has to do with, I want this and I need that to be happy. But you know what? When you're already full, your mind is not thinking about things like this. This is mine and this is mine and this is mine. On a mitya level, this is mine and this is mine. This is my rug, this is my table. You know, but that's just language. There's not, this is mine. This is mine. That thing isn't there. In language, you'll say, yeah, this is my couch, this is my apartment, you know, these are my clothes, this is my money. But this mamatvam is not there. Because it doesn't really matter. You know? There's the practicality, but the mamatvam is not there. One thing I understood, I think I may have told you this story, as Swamiji once, because Swamiji gives so much. He just gives and gives and gives and gives and gives. He doesn't think much about it, he just gives and gives and gives. And I said once, what, because there's always people, the tribals come in, you know, into his living room up in Coimbatore. They wait for him to come into the living room between classes, and they'll be waiting, you know, and he'll always come out and sit in the living room, and there'll be a lot of people there. They all need something. And so I said, what do you, you know, do you ever run out? And what do you do when you run out, you know, because how much can you give if you ever run out? And he said, I give everything that I can, and when I run out, then I don't have it there. I don't have anything to give. It's very simple. You know? If he has it to give, he'll give it. If he doesn't have it to give, he doesn't give. But the reason he doesn't give is because he doesn't have it to give. If he has it to give, he gives it. That's that no mamatvam. You know? Somebody wants this, then you can, it's fine. If I can give it to you, I'll give it to you. If I can't give it to you, then I won't. But if I can, I will. That's the near mamatvam. It's not even a thought. It's just natural. Because I don't need this and I don't need this. You know, my attachment's not there. That's what you find, your attachments loosen up, you know. And your trust, its attachments loosen up, but also another thing, because Swamiji's always stressed, and I'm also always maturing into that trust that what will happen, and what is yours is yours. What will happen, what is yours is yours. You don't have to worry about it. That's the Prarabdha. That's Ishvara. This is all Ishvara. This body, mind, sense, organs, everything that's going on, it's all Ishvara. So what will happen, and what is yours. Nobody will take away from you or can take away from you what is not yours. And so you just relax and let Bhagavan take care of it. So that's a very freedom. Even in Krishna talks in one of his verses, uses this word yadrichya for sannyasi. What comes my way is, you know, what I need comes my way. What I need comes my way. By chance. As though by chance. I get what I need. And that type of buddhi, you know, releases you from this, beautifully from this mamatvam. But you don't have to work for that. It's a value. You can have those values. But that's natural as your mind settles down into your knowledge. So that near mamatvam. And sama, dukkha, sukha. Being the same in dukkha and sukha, what that means is, if I'm not asking the world to make me happy, and it's not that I'm not asking, like, all right, I'm not going to ask you to give me happy situations. I'm not going to ask. It's not that. It's that you don't ask because you're already full. Right? If you're already full, then you're not asking because there's nothing to ask. And so the situations, you know, they say in the Prarabdha Karma, it's 50-50. Your life is going to be full of, you know, happy events, neutral events, and pain-producing events. It means they're meant to be uncomfortable. They're meant to be comfortable, they're meant to be uncomfortable. That's the sukha-dukha. So in these situations, you're the same, because nothing happens to you. Okay, it's a dukkha, it's a difficult situation. And then the self transforms into a dukkhi. That's not going to happen. Nothing will happen. And that's what you continue to recognize, that nothing is happening to me. And so when nothing is happening to me, to my being, then how am I in the uncomfortable situation? I'm dealing with it. That's basically. It's not that the situation isn't uncomfortable, it's meant to be uncomfortable. And so then your objective, you're dealing with it and doing your best with it and trying to make it work. And the situation is comfortable, okay, that's fine. But in either case, you are the same. Now, that's not saying, this is not saying, all right now, you be the same in all of these situations. It's not that. It's that you are the same. Nothing is happening to the self, to your being, no matter what the situation. It's not that you're saying, okay, you know, let me keep myself the same in this bad situation. It's not that. It's that you are the same, and there's not a thing you can do about it. It's not your choice to be the same or not the same. The self is changeless, and the self is much more in the foreground of your experience because of that viveka. And because of that, your mind can be very objective in the, will be more objective in the, in your situation. Right? I'm done.
Kashami.
No, there's more. I know I have to do them next week.
That's all right. That was good enough. That was enough.
Reeves, you all got Swamiji's handout? He does such a beautiful job on this. He spent pages. He has pages, like 5 or 6 pages on this verse. And he goes so thoroughly into it. It's so beautiful. He does a lot with these few verses, so be sure to read it. It's really, really wonderful. Let's hear it. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
So, what you seem to be saying is there's no way, when the Aham lands on Satyam, I guess, that's not an experience. It's a knowing of some kind.
There's a different way. The self that you are, just the conscious being that you are right now, it is its own experience. You know, it's because it's conscious, it's me. It's awareness itself. And so the self experience is already there. The reason we don't call it, or Swamiji used to make a big deal out of this actually, and it is tricky. The reason we don't use the word experience is because we think of experiences as things we're experiencing. Like, I have an experience of this room. I have an experience of this thought. I have an experience of this emotion. So we think of, when we use the word experience, we think of things that are coming and going, experiences that are arising, you know, the experiences that we have. But the self is its own self-evident. We use these words, swatasiddha, means self-evident, our swaprakashatvam, self-shining. It means it is, you are your own experience, and you're always there, right? But there's nobody, it's not an experience that comes and goes. See what I mean? So your presence is not a non-experience, it's just the constant experience that is present to all experience. And so it's an experience that's of a different nature. It's not an experience that's coming and going. It's the constant experience of your own presence, of your own being. So it's self-shining. Does that make sense?
It does, and it also leads to more questions. Like, there's the thing that's constant. There's nothing in terms of senses or thoughts or what, you know, all those kinds of experiences that is constant.
Right.
All those things change.
That's right. All of them.
And the only thing that seems to be constant is a knowing.
Yeah. But now...
not an experiencing.
No. Yeah. It's because of consciousness. It's not the knowing of something. Just now, that's a little subtle. Because it's not that knowing is not performed. It's not a verb. It's not knowing something. Just think of the sun. The sun is a fireball. It's self-luminous, if I can use that word for it. It's self-luminous. Because of what it is, everything is lit up. Whatever comes in this sphere of the sun is lit up. But the sun is not shining. It's not doing an action to light it up. So consciousness, you know, is because of consciousness, everything is known. But consciousness is not performing an act of knowing it. Now, one thing to really kind of be able to see exactly what I mean here is, if you do japa meditation, for instance, you know how to do the japa, you can get to a place where the mantra is rising and setting in your presence. It's rising and setting in consciousness. Right? So the thought comes and the thought goes. The mantra comes, mantra goes. Then you can ask yourself, and have the mind ask yourself, the mantra is rising and setting in me. I'm aware of that. You know, that my own presence is not coming and going, it's not changing, that the thought comes and goes in me, and I have that viveka, that differentiation. Then you ask yourself, am I, the conscious being, performing any act of knowership? Am I doing anything? Am I knowing something? And you'll have to say, no, I'm not doing anything at all. But because, then if you go take it a little further, you can say, but because of me, everything is known, but I am the light, I am the consciousness, but I'm not performing a function. But all of the things that are rising and setting, the experiences are rising and setting in me, who am not doing anything. I'm not a knower. I'm not an enjoyer. I simply am. And that being that I am is whole and complete. But it's not performing a function. So when you say knowing, it's because you're very used to yourself as being a knower, but you're actually referring to yourself. But then I want you to notice that next time when you're doing that, that just think, is this knowing word that you're using verbal? Is it a verb? Is your presence verbal? And you say, no, it isn't verbal at all. It's simply conscious being that is not performing any function at all. Like even while you're talking, like I'm talking right now, I can recognize this talking is going on, perception is going on, all these things are going on. And I am also here and I'm not doing anything at all. Even though, see, but it's a little tricky because that is true. Both things are true. It is true that I'm not doing anything. And it's also true that I am the self of everything that's being done.
That makes it tricky, yeah.
Yeah. And both not doing anything, and I am the self of everything that's being done. Like for the mind, for instance, the mind is thinking, okay? The voice is talking. But the thinking and the talking, these all belong to Maya, to duality. Right? It's all taking place in duality. Maybe that's too much of a jump. If I say...
No, I was thinking of something else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What were you thinking of?
My mind is... Well, the... it seems like the process of making the distinction is one of whittling down and paring down, separating the wheat from the chaff.
In a way.
In a way.
Yeah.
And
initially,
and in a certain sense, though, there's nothing left at the end.
What do you mean by nothing left? Do you mean
non-existence? Well, it gets to what you just were talking about, which is that there's no time when there's a, or there's no situation or time or whatever when. Well, anything that at least I can identify is an experience.
Say I negate, just mentally negate all experiences that I can objectify. Okay. Those don't count. Those are not me. Any experience I can objectify. Now I get rid of all of those experiences, which should include my body, you know, the world, my body, my sense organs, my thoughts, the ahankara, yeah, all of these things would have to go, because they're all experiences. Now I get rid of all of them. What is left?
Well, there's, in a way, there's nothing, because there's never a way...
But what do you mean by nothing? Do you mean non-existence? What does nothing mean? You know?
I don't know or experience anything that doesn't have something that is either a sense experience or a thought or, you know, any of those things. Those things are never not here, except maybe in deep sleep, but then I don't know.
No, but what if you look like this? And think, instead of thinking of it quite like that, first of all, when you go through this process of objectifying things, if you objectify something, there's a subject-object. There's the one who's there, and then there's the thing who's objectifying it. So there's a subject that's being differentiated from the object. Right?
Well, in a logical sense, there is.
Yeah, in a logical sense. I mean logical.
Okay.
But the logical is not away from the experience, either.
Well,
like, look at just a very... This is just very... There's an incredible level of simplicity here. It's not... There's not any tricks in it. If I say, just simply, I am aware of that painting. I'm the subject now. And the painting is the object. Right, so that, and then I look at it a little more clearly. Well, it's really the eyes are the subject here, the one who's aware, and the painting is the object. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So subject, object. But then I can realize, well, the eyes that are aware of this object are also aware of this body. In fact, if I removed my sense organs one by one, the perception of this physical body would be gone.
Yes, that's what I mean by nothing.
Yeah, there would be, nothing. Yes, okay, that's right. Now with the eyes, we remove the sense organs, and not only is the physical world gone from my experience, the physical body is gone from my experience. Right? Now, I can also go in a bit, and I can say, well, you know, actually, these eyes, which I'm now making the subject, first I make this body complex as the subject, but then I go, well, really, the consciousness is in the eyes. The subject is in the eyes here. But the eyes are actually objects also by the mind. My mind is aware of all my sense organs, how they're working, whether they're working. And my mind also is independent. If my mind is daydreaming or thinking about this or that, it's not even using the sense organs. The sense organs require the mind's use. The mind has to be using them in order for them to function. So they're just instruments, and really the subject is the mind. That's the conscious me that's using the sense organs, and the sense organs are making this world available. That's what we call the waking state. But then I have to go in, well, wait a minute. The mind itself, all of the thoughts, all of the moods, the emotion, these are known. These are also objects. And I am the subject. I'm the one who is aware, who illumines the mind. Okay? Even I am the one who's aware of the ahankara, the I notion. I'm talking, I'm doing this, you know, the I. So I'm also illumining that. So now I have a subject-object relationship even in reference to the mind, which is responsible for knowing and thinking and feeling and, you know, enjoying all of these things. So now say, all right, all of these objects that have been objectified, I'm going to get rid of them, and what is left is what?
Well, why stop there is another
okay,
way to
yeah,
say
okay.
that question.
Well, let's not stop there.
Okay.
Now we've objectified the body, so that's gone, okay, as an object. We've objectified the sense organs, that's gone. We've objectified, so get rid of those. And now the mind, with all of its moods, emotions, feelings, all of that, get rid of that, that's gone. The ahankara, get rid of that. Now, what are we going to get? Now, I'm still here, because I'm still the subject, the conscious being. But now I'm conscious being without a mind, without sense organs, without a body, and without the perception of the universe, right? So now, what is the nature of me that is left?
This is where the word knowing comes up.
Okay.
There's some kind of awareness or consciousness.
Exactly. Awareness or consciousness.
Or a knownness.
Knownness. These are synonyms. Awareness, consciousness, knownness. You can say knowing, as long as it's not as though there's somebody there knowing. It is knowing, but like the sun is shining. Like if you're using knowing, like shining, then okay, the sun is shining.
The nature of that knowing is different than knowing
something.
It's
not the knowing of something. It's not the knowing of something. Because get rid of all the things and knowing is still there. That's right.
Well, is it really, though? Because it's an artificial exercise to get rid of all the things. You can't really, there's no way to really get rid of those things. It's just like it's a thought experiment. Like
it's not exactly. Not exactly. Okay. And this is the difference in what you're saying. In fact, just as an aside, in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, for instance, you actually do get rid of any experience of duality is not there in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. All that is there in that experience is just pure being, pure consciousness. Okay, but this is something. So let's just keep that as an aside. That's what we're doing in the Mandukya Upanishad. So we'll really get into that. But you know this logic that's called Anvaya Vyatireka. That lot, and this is again Mandukya. When this is, that is, that's the Anvaya. It shows the relationship. When this thing is, that is the positive relationship. The negative is when this is not, that is not. So if that, both the positive and the negative in logic hold true, when this is, that is, when this is not, that is not, then there's a relationship, an identity there. The one cannot be without the other. You see that? It's called Anvaya Vyatireka. When this is, that is, when this is not, that is not. It means they can't exist apart from each other. They're dependent, there's a dependence on each other. But if the Vyatireka, the negative, doesn't hold, then you have this condition. When this is, that is. When this is not, that still is. When that's the condition, that's in, that for us, that's the satya mitya. When this is, that is. When this is not, that still is. Means there's no, we use it for satya mitya, but what it's showing is that there's no real relationship there. Because, and so now, just looking, don't get hung up now, for now, in physical matter and all of this kind of stuff. Don't even worry about that for now. Just think about experience itself, the nature of experience itself, and apply this Anvaya Vyatireka. So then you would say, in the experience of perception of the painting, right? You could say, when the painting is there, consciousness is there. When the painting experience is not there, consciousness is still there. When the eyes are there, consciousness is there. When the eyes are not there, consciousness is still there. And I can, if I lose my eyes, I still am. When the mind is there, consciousness is there. But don't worry about that, because that gets into physical matter for you if I say it like that. When the thought is there, consciousness is there. When the thought is gone, consciousness is still there. And so now with this type of applying this Anvaya Vyatireka to all experience, imaginable experience, you just notice, what is it that you cannot get rid of?
Two things, actually.
Tell me.
There's consciousness.
Yeah.
But there's also this general category of experience. The specific experiences, yeah, you can get rid of them.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's some, consciousness seems to always be inextricably tied with some kind of experience.
Well,
as far as I can tell. The only time when it seems not to be is in deep sleep, and then I don't know that I'm there at that point.
What you, I would say like this. All of these, there's something to notice about this. In this Anvaya Vyatireka that we're doing, every experience that we're doing the Anvaya Vyatireka with is itself time-bound. Right? The only thing that isn't time-bound is consciousness. And so now, we can go further. Every time-bound experience means it's an experience that's replaced by another experience, right? If I say an experience is time-bound, it means that experience, one experience, is replaced by another experience. Now the thing is, if I were to look even at any one experience, we can't find that experience because it's infinitely divisible. This is what we mean by Maya. So all experiences that you have that take place in time, actually, you can't even find the present of that experience, because any given experience is infinitely divisible. Any experience that takes place in time. Do you see that? So now the point is this: in this satya mitya, there's one experience that is invariable; it's not changing. There's other experiences that come into being and go out of being. So that makes for a difference. There's a time-bound experience and the experience that's not affected by time. And so what you need to do, we'll work on this in Mandukya on Sunday if you're coming. But these are not just words. They're words to apply to your own experience and see if you can see what the Upanishad is trying to make you see there. Mm-hmm. That there's an invariable experience, a changeless experience that you can't touch. And that experience is the satyam, you know? And all the other experiences are mitya because they come into being and go out of being. Anything that comes into being and goes out of being itself doesn't have any essential nature. So that's a lot for me to unfold.
Maybe it's time to stop, but it seems like it's not an invarying experience. It's a logical conclusion.
It's an invariable experience. The nature of consciousness is an invariable experience. These are just words pointing to that experience. It's not just logic. Mm-hmm. They're words that have to land on the actual reality of your experience.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's an experience without a perception.
It's an experience that doesn't require duality. That's why Swamiji won't use the word experience. But if you take away the word experience, then you think it's non-existent or something. Your being is not non-existent. When we're doing all of this meditation, resolving your mind and all of this kind of stuff, what is always left is your presence. The presence is never, you can never get rid of it. All other experiences you can get rid of. This is the ground of all experience that's invariable. But we have to stop because my gas has run out. Run out of gas.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. But it's a good discussion. Well, yeah. Mandukya is going to keep us sitting in it. Yeah. Hey, everybody. So nice to see you again.
My gas ran out, too. I was starting to...
No,
it
was...
My lids. Oh, yeah.
It's good, though.
Thank you, everyone.
No, great. They all love it. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I could listen to that all night.
Yeah. And because it's the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the essence. Yeah. And there's a lot of ways to circle around this too. And not just one to see. There's a lot of ways to sit in this.
But it is kind of late.
Oh, glad to see everybody again. I missed you.
Yeah, we missed you too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It was a long break.
It is a long break, but yeah.
How long is your meditation day?